distinguished research chairs as well, who have some overlap with our group. The faculty are myself and Rob Speckens. We have Adrian Kent, who spends 2 or 3 months a year here, and then we have Raphael Sorkin and Chris Fuchs, who are senior researchers. So this is Yakir Diassi. So he won last year the National Medal of the United States, which was awarded to him in person by Obama, President Obama. Chris Isham won the Maxwell Medal for his work in quantum gravity and quantum foundations. Sandy Popescu won the new Bell Prize in Toronto last year. And Chris Fuchs won the International Quantum Communication Award last year in 2010. These are the younger people, the postdocs. Giulio Chirabella won the Hermann Weyl Prize for work applying group theory to theoretical physics last year. So some of these postdocs have strong overlap with other groups, Giulio and Roger are both very much in quantum information. Alyosha is both in quantum information and quantum and condensed matter. Marcus Muller is also a strong overlap with quantum information. These last three postdocs are part-time. They're part of the Perimeter Institute Australia Foundation's collaboration, and they spend up to 3 months a year at the Perimeter Institute. And then, of course, there are the former postdocs, these people here, students, and these are some of the people who have spent long-term visits, so 3 months and longer during the three-year period. So a lot of people don't really know what quantum foundations is. So here's what it's about. Really, the activity concerns three different things. So first of all, there's the search for novel effects in quantum theory. So things like the quantum Zeno effect, things like the sort of effects that Yakir Aharonov has seen with weak measurements and the consequence of a time-symmetric pre- and post-selected approach to quantum theory. Then there are the investigation of conceptual issues in quantum theory. So things like Bell's non-locality theorem, like Kokenspecker, a contextuality proof that quantum theory is contextuality. Chris Isham thinks that's probably the most important result in physics. He said that every undergraduate should be forced to learn this on the first day of their undergraduate classes. And then also under this second category are things like interpretations, so the de Broglie-Bohm interpretation, the Copenhagen interpretation, the Manivelle's interpretation, collapse interpretations, and more. And then in the third category, there's a lot of work on trying to develop a sort of deeper understanding of the structure of quantum theory. But the work I'm going to talk about today is largely in this third category. So that gives you some idea of what quantum foundations is about. But here's a better way. What happens at 3 o'clock in the morning? So people wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning with a cold sweat for different reasons. In quantum foundations, it's because they're wondering, you know, what the hell quantum states are and where on earth do they come from. So I prepared this slide yesterday, and true enough, I did actually wake up at 3 o'clock this morning. But it wasn't for this reason. It was because my daughter was shouting, "Dada, Dada," and I had to change her nappy. So it's not always for this reason. But that's what I'm hoping. Yeah. So in particular, quantum foundations is not shut up and calculate. This was a slogan that David Mermin invented to describe a particular attitude towards quantum theory. But instead, it's shut up and contemplate. Okay, so quantum foundations is a very broad discipline. We have people from pursuing lots of different approaches. In some respects, it's one of the broader of disciplines in quantum foundations, just because people end up pursuing very different incommensurate approaches. And at Perimeter Institute, we try to be inclusive of all the different approaches. But in this particular presentation, I'm going to focus on really one particular attitude, something new and exciting that's happening in quantum foundations. And this story really began at the beginning of this present century. And the last 3 years have seen a tremendous explosion of of activity. And PI, I had to change this slide. Neil told us that now we have to call Perimeter Institute just Perimeter. So Perimeter has been at the center of this. And this is the third quantum foundations revolution. By my reckoning, that puts us one ahead of string theory. On the other hand, quantum foundations is a much older subject, and so really we're due for some progress. If you do an image search on Google on the word revolution, these are the sort of things you get. The last one is especially scary. So what is the third quantum foundations revolution? Quantum foundations used to spin about the interpretation axis. So what you would do is you'd say, well, what picture of the world does the standard formalism of quantum theory suggest? So you just take the formalism as it's given in the textbook, and you ask, well, what does this mean? You know, what does the wave function mean? And people came up with different answers, which I mentioned, the de Broglie bohm, the many worlds, or the Quasi-Hodels, and so on. In the third quantum foundations revolution, it spins about a different axis, about the reformulation and reconstruction axis. So the question here is, how can we best formulate quantum theory, and what principles best lead to this formulation? So how can we best formulate is how is a sort of reformulation question. What are the good reformulations that exist? And then how can we best derive this formulation from some principles? That's the reconstruction question. So the last 10 years, and especially the last 3 years, I've seen this real confluence of ideas coming from different areas. So we have a strong influence on quantum foundations coming from quantum information. But that's only fair because many of the central ideas in quantum information came originally from quantum foundations. So this is just a matter of quantum information giving back. We've also seen ideas coming from the foundations of computer science. So in particular, the use of category theory, which ends up translating on this other side to the use of pictures or sort of graphical calculus, being very important in this kind of in this movement. The idea of operationalism, this is the idea that you just describe. You try to find a way to describe the experiment simply in terms of knobs and buttons and so on. Also, the idea of inferential structures, so these are sort of agent-based notions, and the idea of causal structure. All these things are going into this, and what we're getting as part of this revolution is, well, first of all, characterization of a landscape of theories, sort of general probabilistic theories. I'll talk about that a little bit. We're getting reformulations of quantum theory. We're getting this graphical calculus I described. We're getting reconstructions, so derivations of quantum theory from arguably more natural starting sets of postulates. We get foil theories, so these are things which are not actually quantum theory, but which shed some light on quantum theory. Then we get interesting constraining principles. There's something, for example, called information causality, and that leads to that's a general principle which constrains general probabilistic theories to violate Bell's inequalities only as much as quantum theory does. So this is some of the work done in this sort of third revolution area. And this tree is very pruned. There's a lot of boxes missing. Also, if I was able to pan to the side, then there's a lot of other activity which is more concentrated in Europe. So people thinking about the issue I just raised, whether you can constrain, whether you can find principles that constrain violation of Bell's inequalities to the quantum amount. Let me just talk about this diagram. Oh, I should say all the purple boxes correspond to work that was done at Perimeter Institute in the last 3 years. This pink box is some work that was done in Perimeter Institute slightly earlier. And then the yellow boxes are of a work that wasn't done at Perimeter Institute. So some of the basic ideas that go into this. I wasn't in Perimeter in 2001. I arrived in 2002. That's one of the ones in the four papers. Yeah, so and not all of them, so not every paper in that list is in here. So in particular, Raphael's paper on anthropomorphic logic is not here.
vacation for them?
It's definitely not driven by application. Nevertheless, some of these ideas end up finding strong applications pretty quickly in quantum information. So certainly the idea that the work of Chiarvella et al., this sort of more general formulations of quantum theory can lead very quickly to more natural ways of optimizing, say, quantum protocols. And so that has happened. But it's not driven by that, absolutely. The stirrings at the beginning of the century I was referring to, well, first of all, Chris Fuchs were giving talks and trying to implore us to do two different things. So the first thing he was trying to get us to do was to think about trying to reconstruct quantum theory from information theoretic ideas, axioms, information theoretic axioms. This is an idea that really goes back to John Wheeler. And then also he was getting people to think about taking a Bayesian approach to quantum theory. And so this side of the diagram is really influenced by that. Then also we have over here the two people in Oxford, Bob Kirk and Samson Abramsky. Samson's a sort of well-known computer scientist. They're both in the computer science department. They have a big group in Oxford, actually. I got people thinking about quantum theory in terms of categories. So they gave a reformulation of some of the essential aspects of quantum theory in terms of categories, which translates into giving a kind of pictorial representation of some of the essential structural aspects of that theory. I wrote a paper in 2001 which actually realized this kind of thing, showing that you could derive quantum theory from a set of reasonable axioms. One of those axioms I didn't like. It was a certain simplicity assumption. So simplicity assumptions aren't the best kind of assumption. They raise all sorts of questions like, well, are there more complicated theories that satisfy the other axioms? So in the last 3 years over here, there's been a tremendous amount of activity on deriving quantum theory from sets of axioms or postulates. I'm not going to be able to talk about all of it, but I'm just going to talk about my own very recent work. The perimeter has been involved quite a lot in this work. Okay, so first of all, let me just talk about this landscape of probabilistic theories. So here the idea is you try to set up a framework for general probabilistic theories. So this is a much more radical landscape than the kind of landscape people talk about in string theory. Sorry to keep referring to string theory. So in string theory, what you have is a given theory, quantum theory, quantum field theory, with many different vacuum solutions, and that generates the landscape. What you have here is a framework for probabilistic theories within which there are many given instances of theories which may or may not correspond to reality. So this could be quantum theory, classical probability theory. There's something called the Speckens toy model. There's something called non-local box world. This is a theory which is more non-local than quantum theory. It goes back to work by Sandy Popescu and Rolick. And then over here in the distance is quantum gravity. So how do we get to general probabilistic theories? Well, the best way to think about this is just to look at the classical case and then the quantum case, and then we can see what we should do for the general case. So here's the classical case. Take a dice, for example. We can represent the state of a dice just by giving a probability for each of the faces, each of the outcomes. Dice has 6 distinguishable states. Okay. And so n is the number of distinguishable states, and you require 6 probabilities to specify the state. So k is the number of probabilities required to specify the state. And then the states live inside the classical simplex. So I've just drawn it for 3. I couldn't draw 6 on this. So the states live inside the simplex. The quantum case, so take a qubit, for example. Well, qubit is represented by a density matrix like this. It turns out that all the information in this density matrix is also contained in this list of probabilities. Spin up along the z direction, spin down along the z direction, spin up along the x, spin up along the y direction, the probabilities for those. That gives you the same information as this. So you can likewise represent the state by a list of probabilities. In this case, n is equal to 2 because 2 is the maximum number of distinguishable states that you have for a qubit. And k is equal to 4 because that's the number of probabilities you require in your in your list to represent the state. And then if you assume that the first two sum to one, then you can plot the quantum states, and they have to lie inside a ball which fits just inside the unit cube of the first octant. This is basically the Bloch sphere. So for the general case, some general thing, well, you'd have a list of probabilities from P1 down to PK. You'd have some total number of distinguishable states, some number of probabilities K in this list, and then the space would have some particular shape. So that's very very rough outline, but you can do a lot better than this. You can really start to build up a sort of a general framework for these general probabilistic theories. And so here's something like that. In the Duotensor paper, I showed how, well, the probability for some circuit, so here's a circuit, you have some boxes representing elements in an experiment. The wires represent systems moving between the elements in the experiment. Then you can ask what the probability for that is. Within this framework, the probability is given by a tensorial calculation. So each of these boxes here represent tensors, actually Duotensors, slight generalizations of tensors. And the horizontal wires going between them represent summation over indices. So the diagram for the experiment and the diagram for the calculation look the same. So that's one way of generalizing this. There are other. So Giulio Chirabella and his collaborators have another framework they invented, another general probabilistic framework. And there have been many things like that in the past. So now we're to go on to the inspiration for trying to think about reconstruction. So if you look at back at the beginning of the last century, we had the Lorentz transformations. And these are just some abstract mathematical rules that didn't appear to make a lot of sense. And you could argue that it was only after Einstein came up with his very natural physical postulates that those transformations made some kind of sense. So the question is, can we do the same thing for quantum theory? Can we come up with some axioms? So given the usual abstract mathematical axioms of quantum theory over here in terms of Hilbert space and so on and so forth, can we come up with a set of natural axioms? Something like this. That's the question of the reconstruction program. So I don't think we could say that we have anything quite as good as this yet, but we're getting closer. We're making progress at least. And so what I'm going to do, here's some of the papers that have been written, this paper, this one, in recent years on this particular problem. So what I'm going to do is tell you about my own new postulates. I'll give you a simplified version of the new postulates because I don't have time to go into them in any detail. And I'll just sort of describe what they are by way of example. So the first postulate says if you have a sharp question, for example, for a die, like, is it a 6? Well, sharp questions are in one-to-one correspondence with pure states like, it is a 6. The pure state corresponding to it is a 6 would have zeros everywhere except for a 1 in the 6th position. So this seems like a very natural requirement of probabilistic theories. Second one is information locality. So if you have a dice and a coin, then n for the total system is equal to 6 times 2, a 12. That's the number of distinct states that you have, or the number of distinguishable states that you have for the total system. The next one is topographic locality. So here the idea is that if you have a dice and a coin, well then the state for this composite system is just given by joint probabilities. So here's the joint probabilities, you know, the probability of getting a 1 and heads, probably getting 2 and heads, all the way down to the probability of getting 6 and tails. These probabilities, these 12 probabilities, give you the state of the dice. And a similar thing is true in quantum theory. This is actually an extraordinary fact, which I think is not often appreciated. And it has deeply to do with the fact that you have complex number field in quantum theory rather than a real number field. If you have a real number field, you don't have this property. In the case of a real number field, you can't fully specify the quantum state by just local sort of joint probabilities. You need an extra non-local. We need extra non-local probabilities. next one is permutability. The idea is permutatability. So the idea is that you can reversibly affect any permutation. Actually, this should be permutability. You can reversibly affect any permutation. So, for example, you have a dice, and you turn the dice upside down, then you send 1 to 6, 2 to 5, 3 to 4, and so on. And this is true in quantum theory as well. And the last assumption, the last postulate that I'm not going to describe, is actually very simple, but I don't really have time to explain to you what it means. So the idea is that filters are a non-flattening. This is to say that filters have a certain non-mixing property. So in quantum theory, a filter is what you get if you project your quantum state onto some subspace. And if you have a pure state coming in and you project it, then the state that goes out is also pure. And so this is a generalization of that kind of property. So these five properties, I've just stated them in very loose terms here, but you can state them much more sharply than this, give rise to quantum theory. Classical probability theory and quantum theory are the only two theories which are consistent with those postulates for finite n. If you add anything which is consistent with quantum theory and yet inconsistent with classical probability theory, then you get quantum theory. So it's not obvious. The paper, the proof of this is very long. And so it's not immediately obvious that those postulates give you quantum theory. The paper also contains a reformulation of quantum theory. That seems to be a common theme, that if you want to reconstruct quantum theory, it's often good to reformulate it, put it in a form that's useful for that.
One thing that mystified me about this literature is the meaning of the word tomography in this context.
Can
you repeat the question?
The meaning. What's the meaning of the word tomography in this context? So in this context, the meaning is if you want to establish the state of a system. So you have some system that's prepared in a certain state, because you have many copies that you can, and you're going to do probabilistic measurements to determine the state. Then what measurements do you need to make in order to determine the state? So it's the process of making measurements to determine the state of the system.
Referring specifically to a system that's a product of components?
No, it could be any system. Yeah, so it could be any kind of system, but what's interesting is when you have a system which is a product of components, then it turns out that you only need product measurements to determine the state. That's the property of local tomography. Okay, so what I'm going to do next is talk about the work on this site. In particular, I'll talk about these two papers. So this is quantum theory as a theory of Bayesian inference. So here the idea is to take the attitude that the quantum state should be regarded as a kind of degree of representing something like a degree of belief. So the probabilities, in Bayesian inference, you think of probabilities as representing degrees of belief. Here the quantum state should represent degrees of belief. So you take that attitude, and then you ask, well, what are the analogs between quantum theory and just ordinary classical Bayesian inference? So over here, the analog of the quantum state is just a classical probability distribution over some random variable. If you have a joint state, then you could have a joint state of a joint classical probability distribution over two random variables. Marginalization of this process. But when you get down to here, the conditional state, well, we don't normally have anything that fills this role. So what they've done in this work is they've filled in that gap and defined an object which behaves exactly like this object in the classical case. Now, it's defined through this equation here. So the conditional state is defined by this equation, and the star product is defined down here. And so Bayes' rule over here has an analog on this side. And then a particularly important equation in classical Bayesian inference is belief propagation. So imagine you have some distribution representing your belief about a random variable R, and then you also have a set of conditional probabilities like this. Well, then you can propagate your belief about the random variable R onto a belief about the random variable S through this equation.
And with this definition of the conditional state in quantum theory, we get a similar equation over here. And what's nice about this is that you get a kind of unification. So many things that you normally treat differently in quantum theory are actually just instances of belief propagation. So here are many things that normally when you do a calculation in quantum theory, you set about the calculation in a different way. Here's the action of a quantum channel. Use a completely positive map. Here's Bond rule, so the probability for some particular outcome, you make a measurement. Again, you can use belief propagation, and there are many more examples. It turns out that you unify all these different ideas with this idea of this Bayesian framework for quantum theory. Yeah?
I've seen Yerkes-Aronoff's weak values represented as conditional probabilities analogous to Bayesian conditional probabilities in Bayesian probabilities. Now, is that a special case of this, or is it a different interpretation? I don't know if from Steinberg's old work,
relating
weak values to quantum conditional probabilities. It sounds similar. But
I'm going to pass over to the expert on this, Rob.
So often people use the term conditional state to mean, you know, what's the quantum state of the system given that I know the value of this classical variable.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be a case where on the right of the conditional is a classical thing.
Mm-hmm.
And here on the right of the conditional you can have a quantum thing. Mm-hmm. So this is a generalization of that notion.
Okay, but which isn't the same as our weak value where everything's quantum.
So I don't know.
Pre-select and post-select, and these are quantum states.
Yes.
And then you divide by an overlap between the two, which looks like the mathematics you do when you do conditional probability in classical theory, except of course it can be complex or negative. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that described as to say the quantum analog. Because you don't know.
So I would say that's different, but there's a different way of dealing with pre- and post-selected ensembles using this formula.
So that means that this framework you're showing us isn't unique.
Oh, I mean, there's other frameworks, perhaps, which have probably similar
aims.
But I think this is, if you're trying to really take this analogy seriously, that the quantum state is like a classical distribution, then I don't think the framework of Aronoff would do that. I don't think it is. That's my understanding. But what is interesting is in this framework, you can deal with pre- and post-selected situations in a natural way, which is not true in standard quantum theory. But it is also true in the Aronoff et al. Work. So there is some sort of similarity in spirit. So that's a particular reformulation of quantum theory as a theory of Bayesian inference. But what you can do now is ask the question, well, is there a sort of general framework, a sort of landscape, if you like, of sort of theories of Bayesian inference? And this work, the next paper is Kirk and Speckens. This paper sort of moves you in that direction. So here's the idea. Imagine you have some causal process. So over here is a causal process, two systems, A and B, they come together, they interact, system C comes out, that goes into another interaction, and D and E come out. Okay, so that's the kind of causal interaction. Here's the sort of direction of time going up. On the other side, we have a sort of inferential process. So here the situation is different. We're asking, rather than asking what happens in time, you're kind of asking what happens in a sort of inferential time. Imagine we're given information about A and E. So here's A and here's E. There are opposite ends of this causal diagram. But on this side, the information about A and E is what we start with down the bottom here. And our goal is to infer some belief about B and C. So B is this one down here and C is this. So from a causal point of view, this is from a sort of background time point of view, this is a sort of a mixed up way of going about things. But what you can do is draw a diagram like this where you calculate the inferential process. So this kind of diagram is a way, in this paper, is a way of encoding these kinds of inferential processes for general theories, not just for quantum theory.
the fact that rho is used shouldn't mislead you into thinking that this is specifically to do with quantum theory. And then this framework over here has certain ingredients. So you'll notice, for example, that there's this object here, and this is the copy operation. In quantum theory, you can't copy states, but you can set up a mathematical operation which affects copying. It's not an allowed transformation physically, but mathematically you can write down an operation which does copy. And since this is just a calculation, it's perfectly okay to use such a mathematical operation over here. Uncopy is basically taking the product of two things here. And then we have something like a general state, and here we have a map which takes a maximally mixed state to a general state. And if we want to formulate we want to formulate classical Bayesian inference in this framework, then we have these rules. And if we want to formulate quantum Bayesian inference, then we have these rules. So what's interesting is we have a framework which is sufficiently general to formulate at least two theories of Bayesian inference, the classical one and the quantum one. And so it might be a good testing ground for setting up axioms where you try to constrain your general framework down to quantum theory in much the same way as what I was talking about earlier, but now in the context of theories of inference. Okay. And so the question is, where is all this going? Yes?
So the classical density matrix is that,
This symbol rho, if you're applying this to classical inferential reasoning, then this symbol rho doesn't represent quantum state. So it would be just a list of probabilities, I assume.
But which is equivalent to diagonal density.
So there's something inconsistent about the line that says classical Bayesian inference if you try and put a general density matrix there, whereas the next line is not inconsistent. My understanding is
that it's saying that if rho, don't think of rho as a density matrix, think of it as a general state. If it has the property of the first line, then you can prove that it must be diagonal density operator, list of probabilities.
I see.
And if it's the second, you can prove it's a density operator.
Got it.
It's useful to have here. So the question is, where is all this going? So I'm showing this. And just to pick on string theory again, this is sort of our M theory down here. this is only half in jest. There is an actual genuine convergence of ideas in here. So one thing that's interesting is that both over here in some of this work and also over here in this work, one of the mathematical objects that crops up is an operator which has positive partial transpose under, if you have an operator corresponding to a process, then if you take the partial transpose over the input degrees of freedom, then that new operator should be positive. So it's the same, so you have a mathematical operator playing a similar role that has similar properties. And so what's going to happen over the next 3 months is that we're going to try and understand just how related these approaches are. They're very different in their original sort of spirit. This is a sort of Bayesian inferential process, whereas over here you have a kind of operational approach. But mathematically there are some similarities cropping up, and I have a feeling that there's something really interesting that's going to come out of that. Okay, so ambitions for the field of quantum foundations in general. When I go to conferences now on quantum foundations, I usually say something like this. I think there's been an attitude in quantum foundations that it's enough to just sit back and sort of solve the conceptual problems after the real physics has been done. And that's absolutely the wrong attitude. What we have to do instead is engage in the great adventure of physics. My feeling is that the sort of conceptual techniques that are being used in quantum foundations can play a real role in helping to discover the new physics, such as quantum gravity, you know, help to clarify problems in quantum field theory and maybe even cosmology. And furthermore, this third revolution way of thinking has the potential to fulfill some of these ambitions. We're looking at general mathematical frameworks that may be hospitable to theories that go beyond quantum theory, for example.
Perimeter Institute is a perfect place for this kind of endeavor, just because we have people in all these different areas. And furthermore, people in quantum foundations are now beginning to think about how to formulate, how to reformulate quantum field theory in the sort of frameworks I've been showing you, and starting to address conceptual issues to do with quantum gravity, again, in sort of very general probabilistic frameworks. But something important is missing in this whole story. You know, and the real reason that people in quantum foundations go into the business in the very first place is because of this. The thing that's missing is reality. We still need to understand what reality is like at the deep at the very bottom. Most people in quantum foundations really care about this thing deeply. So although I'm advocating this third revolution approach, it's really a kind of detour. And we may have to wait until the fourth revolution until we really get an interpretation of what the meaning of these theories are for a picture of reality. Who's going to do all this work? Well, recently we had a conference on the sort of subject I've been describing to you, on this kind of third revolution approach. And we had 110 participants, which is a lot of people for such a niche area. So there's a lot of people around the world, people working in quantum foundations, people who have one foot in quantum information, who are very interested in this approach. And so I think the next 3 to 5 years is going to be very exciting indeed. And I'll stop there.
When I hear my colleague Sandra Popescu talk about quantum information, quantum foundations, he conflates the two. He says that the attraction is that you go all the way from philosophy to technology. Mm-hmm. Now, somewhere in the middle of that is experiment, and I think it's your second revolution, which was the Bell inequalities, which led to aspect experiments, which I think that's what you meant by the second revolution. Is there any hint in any of these new ideas that you're describing of possible experiments?
It's a good question. It's a good question, an important one. When suddenly people have done experiments, but they're the kind of experiments where you sort of know the answer ahead of time. You know, the things that push technology. Interesting experiments and challenging experiments. Actually, so for example, maybe this is not quite an example of the third revolution stuff, but this three-slit experiment that was done recently in the IQC with Raymond and Flanders testing some foundational ideas of Raphael Sorkin. Mm-hmm. It actually is a very good example of this because Raphael proposed a sort of hierarchy of theories, and it turns out that a double-slit experiment is not sufficient to test this hierarchy. Only when you go to the three-slit experiment, that you start to test this hierarchy of theories that Raphael had put forward. There have been experiments to look at seek observables. So I think there's certainly people who are doing experiments, and they're important because they push the technology. What we don't have at this stage is experiments that are really, but we don't know what the answer is going to be. The only maybe counterexample to that is sort of the sort of thing that Roger Penrose has been proposing, that I think a lot of people in this field are well, actually, where you put up a mass in it today. Incidentally, what I meant by the first and second revolution was, the first revolution I felt was sort of, you know, the sort of classical ideas were overturned by Niels Bohr and his Heisenberg nervous. And so for a long time, people had this kind of Copenhagen attitude towards quantum theory. And then, starting with people like Bohm and Everett and ultimately Bell, attitudes in quantum foundations changed back again. By the mid-90s, I think most people in quantum foundations were pursuing a more realist agenda, mm-hmm. Looking for an interpretation of quantum theory. A lot of progress was made, and I think it came to a full stop. And what's been happening more recently is this influence of quantum information in particular on the field has led to this different approach, which I think is potentially much more likely to be fruitful in over the next number of years.
So, deliberately chose not to talk about this time, but I'm just going to ask you. The search for novel effects in quantum theory, Is there one of those effects that somehow was invented at the Perimeter Institute and was a poster boy for your work in this area?
Question. Can you think of something? I mean, but you wrote your 3-slit experiment paper. That was written earlier, wasn't it?
Originally, yes.
Sorry?
Yes, originally. But the whole... But it's only because we were at Perimeter that this experiment ever came about. I mean, I think that's a fair statement.
Yeah.
Interesting coincidence.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting. It's sort of like you have this hierarchy of theories and quantum theory can give you double slit interference, but once you've got double slit interference, it's essentially trivial what it does for 3-slit interference. Mm. It's really just a sort of mixture of 2-slit interferences, essentially. Other examples. Can you think of anything rather sort of novel effect?
Anthony had some stuff when he was here, right?
I mean, he proposed lots of experiments generally to test his non-equilibrium ideas. Anthony Valentini. But I'm not sure you could describe those as novel quantum effects, because if quantum theory is correct, you won't see them.
That's something of a 3-slit experiment, right? It's a possibility of a non-quantum effect.
That's true, but you are seeing, if it's worth doing an experience experiment.
Just
to clarify,
what's an example of one of those Valentini effects?
He's shown, if you look at the de Broglie-Bohm model, there's a key assumption in the original papers So this is a model which adds particle positions in addition to the wave function. There's a key assumption that the distribution of those positions is just equal to psi squared. But that's a very unnatural assumption. It turns out under usual evolution, things very quickly go to equilibrium. But it may be you can find systems where that hasn't happened yet. And so you can do experiments to test them. And so he's devised all sorts of experiments where you might find some non-equilibrium behavior in the context of the Broglie-Bohm.
You can say in a way that is much more striking. One of Anthony's results is that if there is such non-equilibrium behavior where the probability distribution is not psi squared, then you can send information simultaneously faster than light.
Yeah.
And then there's various ways in which that might be realized.
Maybe another example would be preparation contextuality.
All right. Okay. Maybe you can explain.
So the idea there is, if you have a mixed state, and there are many pure state ensembles that can generate the same mixed state, so you know, spin up along this, spin down along this, equally mixed, gives you the same thing as spin up along X, spin down along X. So then, in the context of a hidden variable model, you can ask, could it be that the probability distribution over hidden variables for that mixed state is the same regardless of which ensemble you use to build it. So that would sort of be a natural way of modeling that there's an underlying classical reality and all quantum states are just probability distributions, but a given quantum state is represented by a unique probability distribution. It turns out you can't have that, and you can write down things that are like Bell inequalities, which you call contextuality inequalities, and quantum theory violates those, whereas any theory that had this feature would satisfy it. So this is work I did when I was a postdoc here in 2004, I guess.
There's definitely been an emphasis on Perimeter away from that first topic on the recently interesting folks.
Other questions? We're happy?
Good.
Describes. Okay, let's take half an hour break and we'll come back here.